Welcome back to the Football Fitness Federation podcast. This is episode 287. This episode is with Joey Harty. Joey's the Director of Performance and Science at Sporting Kansas City. So we talked about, as we always do, his background, his career. We spoke about the Director of Performance role and how that differs to previous roles that Joey's had, and some of the key responsibilities that he's found within that role. Then we spoke about making an impact in terms of sports science, but also as a director of performance as well. And then the second part of the podcast, we took some time to reflect on some of Joey's reflections and takeaways from the high performance summit that they held at Sporting Kansas City at the back end of 2022. So with numerous speakers like Gareth Sanford, Scott Peary, Matt Taberner, Jonas Dodu. So we spoke about some of the topics that they covered, some of Joey's takeaways and reflections on it, but then also some of the things that he's applied at the club since that time as well. So it was really nice to catch up on some of the topics, some of which we've covered previously on the podcast episodes with those guests as well. But plenty for you to take away. Loads of practical things to consider and take away from this episode as well. So make sure you have your pen and paper ready. Now, at the time of recording this episode, we are approaching crunch time of the season. It's the time of the season that counts the most, the time where promotions happen, relegations happen. And then we'll obviously be approaching the off-season as well. That is in the UK and European leagues. So in terms of our events, we have got some events that we hopefully will be announcing very soon, but we're also going to be running a series of online webinars too. So keep an eye out for those. We'll announce more information as we get it on our social media. So make sure to be following us on Twitter at @FootballFitFed and across Instagram and LinkedIn as well. And as soon as we get all the information, we'll be releasing the dates and information on speakers for those webinars. Just before we get into the episode with Joey, I just want to say a big thank you to our sponsors. First of all, the Good Prep. The Good Prep is a meal prep delivery service that provides fresh, ready-to-eat, chef-cooked meals straight to your door. They offer meal plans tailored to your personal goals, current activity level and schedule. The Good Prep works closely with elite-level athletes and corporates to develop meal solutions that meet the ever-changing demands of performance and training. Their clients include Brighton Hove Albion, the PGMOL, Commonwealth teams, Gymshark, and many more. The meals are full of all the nutrients you need to keep you in peak performance so you can achieve every goal you set. Plus, you can reclaim your time, eat better, move more, and reduce food waste too. Their meal plans are designed to guide you through your journey to a healthier you. Take the guesswork out of healthy eating and discover the power of nutrition at thegoodprep.com. And make sure you use the code FFF15 for 15% off your first order. This podcast is brought to you by Hytro, the number one BFR brand in pro sport, helping teams and athletes improve performance and recover faster with their blood flow restriction wearables. Built for sport and proven by science, check out Hytro.com to find out more. Also, a huge thank you to Rezl. Make sure to go and check them out on Twitter, at Rezl. I know there's a few players been using the Rezl technology in rehab programs, the likes of Marcus Rashford. And Rezl have now teamed up with the Premier League as well to shape the future of football experiences for fans and players. So amazing to hear and see that. And congratulations to everyone at Team Rezl for all the hard work going into that. Let's get into the podcast now, episode 287, with the Director of Performance and Science at Sporting Kansas City, Joey Harty.
Rezl is the world's number one virtual reality sports trainer. Whatever your team, your sport, your ability, improve your game and train like a pro. Rezl. Reactions, performance, accuracy, stamina, resilience. Train at home in the Rezl Sports and Fitness VR Training Arena. Search Rezl, R-E-Z-Z-I-L. Harder, stronger, smarter. The world's number one virtual reality sports trainer. Available now on MetaQuest.
Welcome back to the Football Fitness Federation podcast. This is episode 287. I'm delighted to welcome onto the podcast today, Joey Harty. Joey, how are we doing?
Doing great, Ben. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you freeing up the time. We've got some cool stuff to chat about. Well, Joey, we always start in the same place on these episodes, and that's around you and your background. So can you give us a little bit of a career guide so far?
Yeah, for sure. First and foremost, thanks for having me on. It's been great listening to your podcast over the years. So fun to finally be able to chat to you in person. As far as my career path, I feel like it's pretty standard for a lot of people in terms of usually people who work in sport have some level of athletic background, whether it's successful or not. For me, soccer was always my thing. Going to university, playing soccer in Phoenix, Arizona, at a Division II school here in America called Grand Canyon University. Was great. I played there for a couple of years. Started to just realize that, playing was great, but in the midst of school and everything else that I was doing, it wasn't my only passion. And I kind of stumbled across what I thought would be this field of training athletes and doing everything that I've enjoyed going through myself as an athletic training. So I kind of went down the path of being an athletic trainer for a little bit through kind of your general requisites in college and realized that, I didn't want to be taping ankles and doing everything from a medical side. I want to be more on the sports performance side. And so I started an internship with our strength conditioning department at the school, and that morphed into me graduating and working into a graduate assistant position there, working with the men's and women's soccer programs, and kind of just started getting my feet wet in anything that I could, during that time from when I stopped playing, sophomore in college to working into my grad school of, working with youth soccer teams. Working with a semi-pro team down in Arizona, now USL team down there, second division, and just gaining any experience that I could. And it was just really valuable because you kind of learn that as a young practitioner, that experiences come really just by opening doors, putting yourself out there, getting your foot where it needs to be, and having conversations with people. And that's just how it worked for me, is really just that, meeting people. And before I knew it, I was still in the middle of grad school. I had a call from former director of performance at Sporting Kansas City in Major League Soccer, a guy named Mateus Manuel. And he gave me a call and he said, "Hey, talk to a couple people. We were looking for a sports scientist at the club and wanted to see if you're interested." And so we kind of started talking about the sports science position, and he quickly realized that I had never worked with GPS or anything like that, as they were starting to use GPS. And I was trying to sell them on myself, like, "I can do it, I'll learn it, no problem." And so he ended up being like, "You're probably not the guy for this position, but we're looking for an academy performance coach." And so I was like, "Great." So I left grad school. I didn't finish it at the time, dropped what I was doing in Arizona, moved to Kansas City as the director of performance for our academy here. And just over time, moved into second team fitness coach, first team strength conditioning coach, now director of performance at the club. And 10 years later, I'm finishing grad school this May. So I never wanted to go back until I felt like it was the right time and I was able to do what I wanted. But it always comes full circle. So that's kind of how I landed here in Kansas City. And it's been a great journey. We're fortunate for being able to be in a place that we enjoy from a family perspective, but also a club that has a quite historic history of success and stable background, which is great.
Amazing. No, it's really fascinating to hear everyone's stories. I know there's a lot that can align with other people's, but there's always the individuality to each story as well. So no, I appreciate you sharing that. I want to talk about initially this step into director of performance role and maybe some of the differences that you've seen and felt on a day-to-day basis from previous roles, like being in sports science and the performance coach roles that you've had before, into a director of performance. What are some of the differences, the skills, the attributes that you need that may be different to those roles?
Yeah, I think the first thing I realized is that you need to be able to extend a lot of grace to people because you don't really know what's always going on in the background, and so there are probably things that I didn't fully understand not being in a director role, things of why decisions were made, why things happened in a certain way, and it wasn't that I just wasn't privy to information. It's just that things are busy, and and there's conversations that you're not always a part of. And so being able to kind of just have that perspective and kind of now share that with all the colleagues that I've worked that I currently work with is, you know, there's a lot more to decisions that happen. You know, the ultimate goal is winning games, you know, and at the end of the day, what's going to drive that? I mean, so being able to kind of keep that at the forefront of what we're doing as a, you know, sports performance, sports medicine department has been huge. And then the other aspect is just the relational component and the communication component, really having to cultivate that. You know, you can have the best intentions, whether it be, you know, in the sports science realm, you know, if it's, you think you have this amazing report and amazing analogy and idea in your mind and how you want to communicate something to the coaches and convey a message that, you know, something had occurred one way and then you realize that it may not really matter to them. And so the ultimate goal is figuring out what does matter to them, you know, and trying to now bridge that gap and focus on that first is what's going to be impactful with the staff that we're working with is huge. And I think that's developed over time. So our head coach has been here as the longest tenured coach in Major League Soccer. And so that is very unique in my role in particular, is just being able to kind of lean into him and lean into his experiences has probably helped me as a young director, you know, coming into this role and being able to kind of just ask him what's worked, what hasn't worked, and pay attention to the types of sessions that have been successful for him, and really just tapping into that knowledge base. You know, so ultimately, I think all that kind of boils down to, like I said, relationship, communication, but also humility, you know, and being able to put your ego at the door. And not try to come in and prove yourself, you know, just really remind everyone in non-communicative and subtle ways that you're there to support them and that we're all working towards the same goal. Because if everyone senses that, if they sense that you're working alongside them, you're going to have a lot more success. And hey, maybe it's, you know, this player probably needs to do a little bit more today. Hey, this player probably needs an extra day of recovery. It was a high match load for him. That session's not going to be best for today. You know, those types of conversations, which may seem basic, right? They happen every single day in the world of football and sports performance. But if you don't come across the right way and you don't have that relationship, those types of conversations are going to be met with walls up or confrontation because someone's receiving it as, what you think my session's too hard, or you think I'm not, my sessions aren't hard enough, or that's the way that things can be perceived. And so you just start to realize that the more that you have to have those conversations that result in impact for the players, it's really important. And I think that's the last piece too, is with the players, just trying to make sure that they know you're here to help them and you're on their side. And I think it's always a fine balance, you know, between pushing them, you know, and you have to be kind of that right hand of the coach, like this day is going to be very intense. This day is going to be very hard, but here's why we're going to do it. And we're going to make sure the day before we're recovering well from the game, so we're ready for this type of session because we have a midweek game coming up in a couple of weeks and we need to push that envelope a little bit. So you guys are ready. And so getting them on board with that, and it comes down to the same thing, just communication and relationship.
Yeah, I love that. The more people I speak to and the more sort of look into different organizations as well, so different sports, but also just different businesses, that's such a key point, isn't it? I know you said before, it probably doesn't seem that big in terms of how we communicate and empathy towards other people's roles and opinions and experiences. But I think that's, it seems like this is the real key, doesn't it? That obviously success and not being successful can come down to a lot of different factors. But in terms of working successfully as an MDT, as a department, that has got to be up there with the absolute, the aim, the priority, hasn't it?
For sure. Yeah, without a doubt. And I think just making sure everyone's aligned, you know, that piece of what are we all working towards, even with the player. I mean, you have the support staff, you have the coaching staff, you have the players. And if everyone wants to be a part of something, you know, and that's how I think great teams find success is, you know, be able to be aligned in those objectives, you know, and as long as everyone feels like they are aligned and that they are participating and that they are being impactful, You know, how do you make other people around you feel like they can also be impactful? You know, that's gonna help the greater good of the team, you know, in the long run.
Yeah, definitely. I know you've mentioned there about a few different people that you communicating with as well. So staff members, but also players. How did you find that? So stepping into the role, you're obviously going to come across a lot of different people at the football club. Maybe some that you did communicate with beforehand, but then I'm sure there's others as you start to look upstairs, and even players, I suppose, on a certain level that you might not have had so much to do with before. So how have you found that in terms of communicating with different people?
Yeah, it's good. It's a learning process. And again, I think it really, the more you're in it, right? This is year 9 for me at the club. It's year 6 for me in this role. And every year I feel like I'm learning more. I'm improving in just my skill set of being able to relate to people. And that's the biggest thing, is being able to kind of adjust your perception of your role. And again, a lot of the people that I work with, I have worked with the entire time that I've been here, at least from the coaching standpoint, you know, so those relationships have just got deeper and deeper. And the conversations become more and more fruitful each year and each season. I think because you become more aligned. And also sometimes you have success, and we've had success, and we've also, you know, gone through turmoil. We've gone through really hard times. And I actually noticed when you go through the hardest of times is sometimes when you actually have to relate to each other and rely on each other a little bit more. And that's helped the conversations a lot. I would say one of the biggest changes of me moving into the director role in comparison to, you know, the strength and conditioning coach with the first team, is that I didn't have to have, you know, the final say. And I think I realize this now. There were times where I was able to use a little bit of a cop-out of, you know, players complaining to me on, hey, why are we doing this today? You know, and I don't know, man, I haven't really heard why we're doing this, and kind of being neutral. You know, it's important to be in line with the coaching staff at all times. But I think when you don't really have the context yourself, you kind of lie right in the middle, right? You don't want to upset either side. So you just are kind of, you know, feeding into the players and then making sure you're still in line with the coaching staff. As I've grown into the role, I've realized the context and the aspects that go into decision-making for what's going to occur on any given day, and how we go about making those decisions. You know, that's ultimately the head coach's decision, but, you know, part of my job is to help with objective information and help with gathered information through subjective opinions of staff members and players and things like that. That now I can provide that context to, you know, other people that I work with, so that they also have the context and like, hey guys, just so you're aware, this is what's going on tomorrow, and here's why, you know, so like, let's make sure we're all on the same page with the players, you know, so that we're being clear and we're being honest, you know, that we're not, because it's a long season, right? It's professional soccer is much longer than a lot of other, at least in America, a lot of other professional sports, less games, but much longer. And so it's a grueling year that you have to be able to be in tune with everything that's going to be occurring. And there's a lot of ups and downs, emotions, you're playing, you're not playing. And so it's natural, it's human nature for people to get upset, to have bad weeks, bad days, bad months. And the more that we can be consistent and provide consistency in our roles, I think is huge. And that consistency is definitely a piece that I've learned.
Yeah, no, that's great. Something that we've spoke about a lot recently, both internally and externally at some of our events, is sports science or performance support or whatever we want to sort of phrase the physical work that goes on with players. How much of an impact we're making, like really looking at it analytically, how much of an impact are we making with players? And maybe what have been some of your lessons from that in terms of making an impact in your role now, but also previous roles?
Yeah. No, it's a good question. I think evaluating impact has to be the number one priority when relating to sports science. You know, and let's just discuss sports science as, you know, as any sort of testing parameters with players, you know, and monitoring parameters of players, whether that's GPS, heart rate, force plates, you know, any sort of strength testing, whether it's Bald, Kinga Tech, things like that, movement screens, anything that we're using to kind of evaluate the player's response to load, response to stimulus, whatever it is. And I think evaluating that impact for me personally, earlier on, and I still feel this, but like you have a little bit of FOMO, right? Like there's always something new that's coming out, right? There's always new technology. I listen to a podcast by you and, you know, you're talking to so-and-so and they're doing a new test on a new piece of equipment. It's like, man, I need to get a belt squat, an ISO belt squat in here because we're not doing that. You know, like we need to evaluate player strength through peak force, you know, take Alex Natera's isometric course. We need to do ankle push ISOs, knee push ISOs, hip, you know, like all good things, but they also, they require, especially in season, a new stimulus, a new protocol, and they require consistency. And so I think being able to evaluate impact is it worth implementing something right now? And if we're going to implement it right now, how is it going to be received? And what are we going to do with that information? And I mean, how is it going to be received by the coaches and how is it going to be received by the players? Because it is such a long season. The way that I view it is that there really is one time to like properly introduce a new protocol for assessing, monitoring, testing players. And that's leading into preseason. In my opinion, if you don't do it leading into preseason, the players are going to sniff you out. They're going to be wondering, hey, what is this? Why now? You know, it's June. We're 6 months into the year. So we just came out of a congested period. It's the hottest time of the year here in the Midwest. Why are we now doing this? Oh, well, we want to see what your strength's like. Well, based on what? You know, and so I think just having that framework in your mind, that just the idea that you're going to have those conversations. And that you're not trying to like make it be something it's not, you know, that we can really be honest with them and say, hey, look, we wish we had a baseline for you guys. But right now, if we can assess your hamstring strength in this one test, it's a prone ISO 30 test, right? Here's good research. If you are interested, probably not, but if you are interested, there's a lot of research on monitoring fatigue in you guys as we approach the end of the summer months. And it's low hanging fruit. We're going to start doing our gym work. You know, like you, if you're going to do it, you have to have those types of conversations. But I think that's the biggest thing. It's just evaluating how it's going to be received first and foremost. And then if it's going to be received well and you're determined on how you're going to communicate it, it's really just evaluating, like, how are you going to use that information? Cause nothing's worse. Anyone who's worked with any person, not just an athlete, and not just in professional sports or the team setting, but if you've ever done testing on them and then you just don't tell them anything about it, right? Someone comes in, you do a VO2 max test with them at a private facility and you're like, all right, that was good. Good job. We'll see you later. You know, they're going to be great. You know, what's my score? Oh, it was pretty good. Yeah. I got to look at it. I got to look at the results a little bit. I'll get back to you tomorrow. You know, like it just doesn't go over very well. You know, people are going to say, either you don't know what you're talking about or the test didn't work, you know, it's going to be one of those things. And so I think it's more simple than just like, how can you really communicate it? And then how can you make it impactful through just being consistent and using it, you know, day to day, even if it doesn't always make a difference, you can communicate it and say, hey, look, this is a little bit high. It's a little bit low. Maybe there's just a conversation to be had.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. It's something that we've covered a little bit before on making those decisions. Because like you say, you can get caught up like a magpie, can't you, on all the glittery new
for
stuff
sure.
And just start trying to do everything. But I love the fact that you're talking, obviously it's very timely now because in the UK and in European leagues, we're approaching sort of end of season, preparing for pre-season really as well when teams are starting to finish for the next few weeks. So this is going to be a key time for coaches to hear this as well in terms of implementing something to take into next season, which I think is a great point because that is the real key time, isn't it, with players.
For sure.
But then the other thing is just questioning, like you just said, why are we doing it, how it would be received. I think that's such a key thing rather than just you knowing what you're trying to get out of it. Again, it ties back to what you covered before in terms of communication and language to other stakeholders at the club there has to be that conversation there, doesn't there, to explain the process.
For sure. Yeah, no, it's, and they want to know, you know, if back to also becoming a director, it's, you know, if you have a new piece of equipment or, you know, a contract involved or something, and, you know, you're trying to get an extra 10 grand for next season. Well, yeah. coaching staff, general manager, you know, they're going to want to know, okay, so why are you wanting to get that? You know, it's probably not going to be an impactful conversation to say, hey, yeah, well, this is going to reduce our hamstring injuries. Right. Okay. How, you know, it's like, great. Well, if you're doing Nordics or isometrics or wherever it is on the Nord board, yeah, there's research that says that, you know, Nordics are good for hamstring injuries, but why do you have to use a Nord board? You know, how are you going to use that information? Is it the asymmetries? Is it the peak force? Are you going to be consistent with it? You know, so be able to communicate that also to the stakeholders prior to implementation is key too, you know? And so being able to do the research and evaluate, you know, because there's also different products out there. You know, is the Nord board the right one? You know, we used to have Kankatech. Now we do have a Nord board here. And I think they're both great products. You know, it just depends on the situation and the timing. And so being able to just know why you're going to need that piece of equipment is going to help the coaching staff or the general manager, whatever the setup is as at the club, be bought in from the start.
Yeah, definitely. I think this whole discussion around impact will definitely come up again as we cover a few other topics. But firstly, I wanted to jump into the high performance summit that you guys held over at the club, which I know was at the back end of last year. That's right, isn't it?
2022, actually.
2022. Okay, so yeah. So
yeah, it's just a little over a year ago.
Yeah. So I saw the sort of lineup that you had of speakers, which looked incredible. We spoke about it a little bit before we started recording, talking about the whole organizational side of running events, which is maybe a different podcast to cover. But what I thought it'd be quite nice on, because you've had a few of the speakers at the event that have previously been on the podcast as well and spoke about probably similar topics, just bringing up a few of them and talking about some of your takeaways and some things that you've maybe put into play at the club as well. Some things that you practically put in. So the first was Gareth Sanford, who's hopefully going to be on the podcast again soon, which so this could tie in quite nicely. But we spoke about on the podcast the future of football, and Damien Harp was on the podcast as well, and the demands that players are experiencing and going to experience as well in terms of how the game evolves. And I know we spoke about something similar at your event. So what are some of your reflections on that point to start with? And then also, what have been maybe some changes that you've made on the program?
It's going to be a busy time over the next few weeks for our online community members, because we've got loads of great content coming for them to upskill and to educate themselves on a number of different topics. So over the next couple of weeks, we've got presentations from practitioners like Barry Drust, Angela Jackson, James Malone, James Coneboy, all from our recent networking events. They'll all be uploaded onto the community. That's covering a number of different topics. Barry presented on, is sports science having as big an impact as we think? Angela Jackson presented on the management of lower back pain injuries in youth athletes. James Malone spoke about the role of a mentor. And James Coneboy spoke about reflections on the program at Aston Villa Academy. We've also got an extension of our mini-series by Josh Fletcher. So that's going to include a video on managing stress. And there will be a couple of other videos from that mini-series coming over the next couple of weeks as well. So absolute loads going on. We've got another couple of webinars to announce very soon as well. So if you want to get access to the community, go to footballfitfed.com. Click the community tab and get yourself signed up. That will give you a free 30-day trial. After that 30-day trial, you become a full paid member of the community. You get invited into our members-only WhatsApp group, and you get future access to all the content that we've coming over the next few weeks as well. So go and check it out, footballfitfed.com. Click the community tab and sign yourself up there to a free 30-day trial. Here's part two of the podcast with Joey Hartu.
Yeah, no, it's the event as a whole was a great experience, you know, and our number one objective as a club and for myself in particular was to bring in individuals that we wanted to learn from, that we wanted to talk to, and being a little bit selfish from Sporting Kansas City's perspective. You know, let's bring in these people because they're high quality practitioners, and Gareth was at the top of that list. You know, and conditioning, I think, is, you talk about impact, you know, as you said, that'll keep coming up. For me, if you're working in soccer, like, conditioning is where it's at. Like, you need to be impactful with your conditioning. If the club's never rotating players and players are playing games every weekend, you probably don't have to worry too much about that, you know, and that's probably also not your focus, right? You help them recover, you help them maintain qualities and keep them on a good rhythm, but the game is kind of their stimulus. The real trick is the players that are returning from injury and the players that are not playing significant minutes or not playing minutes at all. You know, the amount of times you get 20 games into a year and there is a player who has played 0 minutes, and now all of a sudden they're thrust into a situation due to injuries or whatever, that they're playing 6-7 matches, 90 minutes in a row, that's a tall task. And so how do you keep those players fit? And that's why I brought Gareth in, is everything that he has done in his, I say research, you know, probably more just his applied work regarding anaerobic speed reserve and everything surrounding how to maximize players' fitness in season. And Gareth has a unique, I would say, background in terms of his experience working in football, but experience currently, you know, working with the Olympic athletes and middle distance runners in particular. And I've had conversations with people over the years where I really believe that soccer athletes' physiological profiles resemble middle distance runners in terms of the speed and in terms of the aerobic contribution of the work that they do. It's a really unique hybrid type of athlete, right? Where those athletes are fast, they are explosive. They may be running, you know, at 9.8, 10, 10.2 meters per second as a top speed, but they're also running a 5 minute mile, right? They got both sides of the spectrum, the speed and the endurance. And that's what Gareth talks about all the time, is you have some athletes that are more speed dominant still in soccer, and you have to find a way to improve their endurance. And then you have the athletes who are heavy endurance athletes, and you're trying to improve their speed a little bit. And I know Gareth's been on, and he's dove into all of that. So I won't talk about all of his work, but for me, where that has really became impactful is, it was one thing Gareth mentioned, is to be really sure what the athletes need. Is they're probably getting a lot of the speed stuff because everyone does that in soccer, right? You talk about top offs and, you know, hit training and whether it's post game or at the end of trainings, you usually are supplementing the speed work, right? There's been enough work out there regarding acute chronic, regarding hit science, that players need to make sure they're managing their sprint distance, high speed running load, and top end speed work. You're probably not doing a lot of the like that middle to low end zone aerobic work though in season, right? You think about that in early off season. I don't think it's quite zone two. I think it's probably a little bit different than that. You're probably bumped up a little bit from what your traditional zone two work is. But I would say from a rehab perspective and from a bench player perspective, to really assess that, one thing that Gareth had mentioned is lactate testing with those players. And to me, that always seemed like a daunting task, you know, and it's like, man, lactate testing, you gotta have all these resources and people and get them in the lab. And it's so easy though. I mean, I bought a lactate, it's called Lactate Plus. It's a lactate monitor off Amazon. It's like $200. You can get a player on a bike. You can have a player in rehab while he's doing, maybe it's some steady state running around the field with some increments, and evaluating where they're at just basically under 3 millimoles per liter of body weight, and kind of seeing where they are at that moment and tracking fitness improvements is actually a good barometer. And so there's been some protocols through some different people that we have stolen stuff from. One of them was a protocol that Gareth had used on the bike, where you're working for 10 seconds at a moderate click, and then you're recovering for 30 seconds and you're pushing that, and you're working that for a period of time, basically until you increase, you know, your lactate increases beyond that threshold. And so finding that where the players can work, getting in, tapping into, like I said, that little bit of intensity, but recovering enough with the work to rest ratio where you're not going beyond the 3 millimoles per liter is key. And so we found that on the field with some runs, similarly, where you're doing like a 10-second run and a 10-second walk, 10-second run, 10-second walk. And you start to find a lot of similarities with players. You know, I think with anything, it's not like I'm out there with the lactate tester on every single player every single day, but with similar profiles of guys and similar work that they've done, I feel like you can get fairly close to where they need to be. And the whole goal is, how do you improve their capacity, improve their output while limiting fatigue? And so, you know, for us, right, if you just go with the traditional microcycle in soccer, you know, minus four, minus three, minus two, minus one, and you look at maybe your tactical periodization model, and you got strength on your minus four day, you have endurance on your minus three, and speed on your minus two. Well, on that endurance day, it may be a day that you are still providing a top off in terms of a speed exposure, but we'll usually finish that with one of those types of runs for a lot of our reserve players. And I do believe now that's a piece that if you are tracking longitudinally accumulations of reserve players over time compared to starters, or let's just say that the starters are getting 30 kilometers a week with training and game. Well, the reserves, you have to do a lot to get them even close to that. You know, and I don't know, this is more anecdotal than anything, but time on feet makes a difference, you know, and just accumulation of steps. And I'm not just, you don't want to just add useless work, you know, just have them jog around the field for the sake of trying to get them 30 kilometers in a week. I don't believe they need that. But if they're at 17 kilometers, well, 17 to 30, that's a big jump. You know, so what's a little bit of extra endurance work that is more impactful than just jogging around the field that still requires a stop start? Sometimes for a different position group, you may add it at a different location on the field for perception. You know, maybe it's an outside back, they're going 18 to, you know, middle third, just that's kind of their distance, because that's happens a lot in the game at a low to moderate intensity, you know, where they go, stop, go, stop, go, stop. But it's also from what we've seen with the heart rate, you're actually getting a good aerobic response. And the guys aren't feeling fatigued with some of that work, which has really, really been helpful. And again, I don't think that's exactly, maybe it's not exactly as Gareth would have mentioned it, but all of his work has kind of spurred that on, and looking at the guys' profiles and kind of seeing which guys need a little bit more of what. Because sometimes if you're always doing speed work with a speed guy and he's not playing games, he's going to be that guy who's, you know, he's your racehorse, and he gets into a game and the coach is like, man, he looks dead. He only played 10 minutes. And it's probably because he is dead. Right? You're 20 games of the year and he hasn't gotten any of that work that will improve his capacity. So that's where that's really made a big impact for us.
Yeah, no, brilliant. Great breakdown that. I think it's a factor of success for some clubs sometimes, isn't it? Because generally you've got clubs towards the top end of tables that will have quite a tight knit starting 11. There might be a few changes here and there, but generally it's going to be similar sort of players that are going to be playing week in, week out. So like you say, you suddenly get a pool of players that aren't getting the minutes and aren't getting the exposure. So it's really important, isn't it? But then when you get into this time of the year, like we're recording now, again, talking about the European leagues, crunch time, those players have got to be able to step in and play the remaining five games of a season if someone drops out injured, haven't they? So yeah, it's super, super important. The other thing just tying in with that, Joe, is Scott Pirie. So I know he spoke around in-season strength training, and it's something we spoke about a lot, but the approach to that, obviously people are starting to use more microdosing, there's more research coming out on the sort of different approaches that people are taking. Is there anything that you've adapted, changed within that time that have taken from him speaking, but also just generally as well?
Yeah, you know, Scott's a great guy, and he's had a wealth of experience, you know, with everywhere that he's been, in the States and abroad. And so that's why I wanted to bring Scott in, brought Gary Walker in, who also has had great experience for a long time. And both of those guys, again, kind of like we talked about earlier, of myself being in a direct role, I've been in my role for a while, but I'm still a young practitioner. And, you know, I want to learn from guys who have skin in the game. You know, it doesn't always have to be some like fancy model or anything. I think it's the real world experience. And Scott has that, and Gary has that. And so just hearing their perspective on programming and planning, and I would say both of their presentations kind of aligned with each other. You know, Scott's, because of what he's done for so long, it was supposed to be about strength training. It did go into strength training, but it really went about planning. you know, and I think that's what it came down to. And it wasn't necessarily anything new, but it was a really good reminder in terms of, like, doesn't matter where you're at, doesn't matter what level it is, what coach you're working with, what players you're working with. If you don't have a plan in terms of what you hope to accomplish, then you have nothing to deviate from, right? And deviations have to happen every single day. And, you know, we mentioned before the podcast started, but like Altus, you know, Altus track and field, they've been kind of an influence for me. And they always talk about having a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C, even just for exercise selection in gym. And, you know, they're a little bit more individualized with the types of athletes they work with, but that's how I kind of relate that to, you know, everything that Scott was talking about is, you know, you don't back off, but just have a plan and how you may deviate from that if you need to. Because if you feel like, back off, and you back off for the whole team or the whole squad, someone's going to be detrained, you know. But if you have a plan A, B, and C, then maybe it's the one player and you have that relationship and the communication where that player, you know, can come up to you and say, hey, man, like, my legs are dead today. And you're like, okay, let's, you know, and this Scott was saying this, let's still get you in the gym. Let's actually do some heavy upper body work. Like, let's get a good hormonal response in your body. And whether it's psychological or physiological, like, you're going to have a change in that feeling that you have right now, you know. And then we do some lower body recovery afterwards. Or, hey man, my hamstring's a little bit tight. Well, let's get you in the gym and let's do some lumbopelvic work and try to get your hips feeling good and maybe do a little bit of like some PNF or something with the hamstring, but pretty soon, like, your hamstring's not feeling quite as tight and you didn't just spend 30 minutes on a massage. You actually got your body moving in the gym. And that's everything. It's just the communication, those little wins that you can have throughout the year. Now, all of a sudden, that player's locked in, that player's bought in, you know, and you said everyone's talking about microdosing, all these things. I think it is microdosing, right? Like, and that's how Scott said you plan it out is, you know, what are the themes for the training day? Focusing on the field first. What are the themes for the gym? And what's the frequency? You know, get it as much frequency as possible to have that minimum dose. And then it's, you know, what I just said, it's having those relationships with the players, because, you know, well, if you can't do the lift today, we had to deviate from that plan. We can do a lift tomorrow. We just know that now we're matching minus two. So we may not do the volume or the intensity that we were going to do, but we can still, maybe, you know, whether it's a overcoming ISO, like, we can still get some good work into the nervous system. Maybe it's more neurological and doing something that's not going to cause stress to the tissue. So, yeah, I mean, overall, I would say those guys just have great practical experience, you know, especially in terms of talking about the plan throughout the course of a year.
I think you just mentioned there, but that's real world situations, isn't it? All the things that you've covered there, they're real world situations that are going to crop up throughout the season, time and time again, and test your skills as a practitioner. If you're working with a player within those situations, they're going to be the tests, aren't they, in terms of having those plans and having the ability to adapt within those scenarios. That's the real key.
For sure.
Yeah, no, brilliant. I know this probably ties in a little bit with what we spoke about around availability, and I'm sure you spoke about more than this, but Matt Tabner as well was over speaking.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've done a Q&A with Matt, one of our events, but we also did the bit of a monster podcast for episode 100 with Tom Allen, where we had to split it up into a two-parter where we covered all sorts of topics. But what was some of the takeaways from what Matt was speaking about?
Yeah, you know, Matt was interesting because, I mean, by the time we brought Matt in, you know, I feel like everyone's read some version of the control to chaos continuum, right? Like it's morphed into different things over the years. But just talking to Matt, I think, was really the coolest thing. It's just like having some good conversations with him and talking to him about some of our specific return to play scenarios at our club and kind of getting his feedback, because same thing as before, right? You can get so caught up in like things need to be this way, or it's not going to work, or it's too much risk. But again, the end goal, and this is where I think Matt provide the context, because it's, it, the way I had always viewed it is great, great framework. But is it always realistic? Is it always practical? And sure, and some of the scenarios that they're talking about, when you have, you know, an actual surgical reconstruction for maybe a grade 4 hamstring strain, you know, you do have the time to go through the entire control chaos. But the way I had perceived it is a lot of people were taking this framework and trying to apply it to maybe a grade 1 or a grade 2, where the guy's missing, you know, depending on the scenario, but let's just say 10 to 21 days. And so do you have time to really follow that entire framework? And Matt, and correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, if he's listening to this, but the way I perceived it is, you know, it's situation dependent, you know, and that's kind of, it was good confirmation to hear, because that's how you do it in the real world with a lot of the scenarios is, yes, go from simple to complex 100%, right? Go from controlled to chaotic 100%. Don't go from just having jogged around the field to jump in the team training. Like, what's that bridge? But do you need to have every box checked off? Maybe not, right? Maybe the guy hasn't been so deconditioned that he needs to have every box checked off. And that just comes from the pressure of, you know, whether it's coaching staff, whether it's ownership, whether it's the player themselves, right? There's a lot of times where you're telling a player, no, you need to do X, Y, and Z. And the player is like, I'm good to go. You know, I've been doing everything you asked me to do. You know, I haven't had issues for 2 weeks. I'm not having anything residual from the gym work. I've opened up, you know, I've done everything you needed, you know, so you have to find that balance of really being able to apply that. And that was what Matt's presentation was on is control to chaos in that framework. But again, the key, I think, from him and as you put that into practice is really understanding where there may be steps in there that can be blended. I don't want to say skipped, because it really is just, it's as long as everything you're doing, gym work, gym to field and field to training, is simple to complex, I think you're using that framework in a very positive way.
I suppose that sort of approach will apply to a lot of different concepts as well, won't it? And that's where the real art of a coach comes across, and experience as well comes into it, doesn't it? That you've got to,
for sure.
And you've picked up a few years, a few seasons of working within similar roles, similar situations coming up, you sort of get that instinct as well as a coach, don't you, when things should be applied at different times?
Yep. Yeah, so, no doubt.
No, it's really interesting. The only other one I was going to point out, obviously someone that's been on the podcast a couple of times before, Jonas Dodu. We spoke about him a little bit before we started recording. We did the episode on speed training priorities. It sounded like he covered some similar stuff over with you guys as well, but just in terms of, obviously, Jonah speaking, but in terms of the approach that you take at the club in regards to speed, you talked about it a little bit before with the work that Gareth was doing as well. And there seems to be a big focus on the speed element and probably not so much on a conditioning element. But what's been the big sort of takeaways, the things that you've implemented in terms of speed for the players?
Yeah, I think it's... you know, Jonas, what I appreciate about Jonas is that he has a real art of communicating things simply. And I originally came across Jonas through the Altus Foundation course. You know, I did their foundation course back in 2018 when it first came out, maybe 2017. And it was a monster of a course, like in terms of just content, you know, like going through it all. But I thought it was great. You know, and that's what I liked about it is they had a ton of practitioners' input brought into this course, and that's, they had Jonas brought in as well. And through what Altus has done, Exos hasn't been another big influence in a lot of methodology in terms of training of our athletes here, but just taking those concepts and microdosing, as you mentioned earlier, or just, you know, more simply, I think, you know, we kind of follow the Exos model in terms of like a pillar prep and a movement prep, you know, and that relates to the players, you know, like pillar prep or activation. It's a good time to just prepare the body. And I think you can take concepts that Jonas talks about, or that Altus talks about, or just track and field in general, in terms of speed mechanics. And especially from the framework of, you know, like lumbopelvic stability in relation to hamstring injury prevention, and just overall running economy, running efficiency, and how that relates to reduction in injuries. I'm not saying that I feel like there's for sure been a reduction in injuries, but I do think by microdosing those things with guys that have had chronic or recurring hamstring injuries, it makes a big difference in that pillar prep phase. And so Jonas, he talks about three concepts, which I think are, it's good. They just simplify it. Like he says, projection, reactivity, and switching. And those are kind of his three pillars and three things that he evaluates. And I think those are really important qualities, you know, and I think about, especially in terms of projection, is how many guys truly are able to extend their hips, right? Being able to get into hip extension as they are projecting themselves forward, and be able to recruit the glutes in terms of that movement, you know, and being able to stabilize with the core because the hip is extending. And a lot of guys, specifically soccer athletes, who are much more upright in the way that they move throughout the game and throughout trainings and just the demands or the constraints that they're exposed to, haven't felt that, you know. So you work with a guy in rehab and you start to do a lot of stuff that translates to projection as a quality that you will be doing in the warm-up. You know, we do a lot of acceleration work and kind of blend the starts that we do from 2-point to reactive and things like that, or kneeling, just depending on the demand of the day that we're trying to hit. But being able to kind of bridge that gap with the guy from rehab to then bringing him back in, you start to realize that, okay, like simple concepts, you know, whether they're, it's more diaphragmic breathing based where you get one leg in hip extension, one leg in flexion, just trying to get them to feel the position and then doing that a little bit from static to dynamic, but in maybe a hip bridge position, you know, and getting them to feel the glutes, feel the core, not the hamstrings. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, kind of your hamstrings, your QL, your glute in terms of hip extension patterning and not being dominant in the hamstrings, because you see that a lot in recurrent hamstring injuries. But getting them to feel that position, and all of a sudden you get them into a wall drill. And this is where you can focus on projection or switching, you know, whether you're going for speed or you're trying to get the guy to load the hip, drive out of the hip, and kind of like a load and lift type position. Then the guys start to translate that to marching, you know, and whether that's with the prowler, you can have them do that in the gym prior to going out. Again, for a guy that's individualized comeback from an injury, or with the team, you know, it's really easy to, you know, we don't do like a whole speed session, but it's super easy to throw in marches, skips, bounds, you know, as a part of our warm up in different variants. And we do that every week. And so I think tying that in prior to training with guys, and not every player all the time, because you have to create that buy-in, you have to make the guys kind of want to do it. We try to make it a little bit autonomous pre-train with guys. But again, every guy wants to run fast and every guy wants to stay healthy. And so if you can kind of bridge that gap and you can talk about those things and being able to learn from guys like Jonas and communicate effectively like he does in an area that I feel confident in, but being able to rely on, you know, track and field experts and players, like actually being able to like, hey, look at this guy. This is look at this rugby athlete. Look at this. You know, I've shown him Jonas's videos before, or some of the athletes he works with, because some of those guys can move, you know, or like NFL players, you know, you talk about it, you know, they're like, hey, how fast did that guy, you know, run on that 100-yard, you know, whatever it is, kickoff return. Yeah. And then you can show them the speed that they hit, and you're like, man, that guy was in pads and he was still faster than you. And so you kind of create a little bit of that competition. And then, you know, as soon as you kind of keep those conversations going, keep it fun, you have that interest. And so it's easy to kind of start being like, hey, you know, let's work on this today. And then you start to give players little tools in their toolbox relating to speed in their mind. And it is, but in my mind, it's also probably very tied into injury prevention strategies.
Yeah, there's definitely a crossover there, isn't there? No, that's brilliant. I thought that was a great breakdown. There's obviously more speakers involved at the event. I'm sure you took plenty away from as well, but I feel like we've covered absolutely loads there. So I really appreciate that, Joey. In terms of if people want to get in touch with you, they want to keep up with what you've got going on over at the club, where would you direct people?
Yeah, I would say Instagram's probably the main one for me. I'm on Twitter a little bit, but usually just kind of seen what's on my feed. I don't really post much. And I wouldn't say I post a ton on Instagram either, but if people DM me or what have you, I'll typically see it on Instagram. So yeah, Instagram, and I'll share that with you, whatever the handle is, and people can always reach out for sure.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll post that in the show notes. But no, Joey, thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate you giving up your time and breaking down everything in terms of the event. And yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, no, Ben, it was great. Appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for listening to episode 287 of the podcast. And a big thank you to Joey for coming on as well. I really enjoyed our chat. I think we covered loads of great practical information that can be applied across numerous settings. Make sure you go and give Joey a follow over on social media. He's at JoeyHarty9 on X or Twitter, and at Joey.Harty, that is on Instagram. Takeaways on this one. One thing I thought I'd bring up at the start was the interesting comparison between players and middle distance runners when we were talking about some of the work that Gareth Samford had done. Then we also, the opportunities, this comes up time and time again, but the opportunities that Joey took from his network. Obviously, he mentioned about the initial opportunity at Sporting Kansas City, coming from someone within his network, someone that he'd come across previously, so the importance of that. Also, the fact that he mentioned about saying yes to things and then working out how at a later date, and that was in respect to learning GPS. I think that's an important thing that we have to do as practitioners. Sometimes we're not going to know it all. We have to sort of find our way. There's going to be strengths, there's going to be weaknesses in certain positions of a role, but just accepting work and then finding a way of getting around it, again, utilizing that network, reaching out for help and assistance at that time, I think is really important. And then one of the big takeaways, I think, from this one was implementing new ideas, new ways of tracking. First of all, what matters to players, coaches, what's important for them has to be determined, but also how will new additions be received? And obviously Joey brought up the timing of those new additions as well. We are approaching end of season, which will then go into pre-season, and that is going to be a key time for new additions to be made. So, and that kind of gives a little sneak peek into some of the webinars that we've got coming up as well. So keep an eye out for those. But yeah, loads of great stuff in this one from Joey. I really appreciate him coming on. I'd love to hear your takeaways as always, so please give it a share. And just finally from me, make sure to go and check out our sponsors, Resil, Hydro, and The Good Prep, doing some amazing work. Go and give them a follow over on social media. Thank you again for your support, and I'll speak to you again next week in episode 288.